Thanks for joining us for Access Utah. We're glad you're with us. I'm Tom Williams. We're going to be talking about the history of progress in disability rights and where we are now, where we go in the future. This occasioned by the 40th anniversary of the Center for Persons with Disabilities at Utah State University. And on that occasion, they have an exhibit up in the library of the Merrill Kazir Library on USU campus. I found very interesting. I learned quite a bit just browsing through that library. There's a documentary out as well that you could see. I missed this, but Lives Worth Living, my guests inform me. That's from American Experience series on PBS. There are some interesting places to go, and we hope that you'll stay tuned here to learn a bit about the history of progress for people with disabilities. We're going to be talking about that in the first segment. In the last part of the program, we'll talk about a specific program that's administered through Utah State University. It's called AgriBuildy, and it's a program that helps people who have grown up in agriculture, who want to stay in agriculture, but have been disabled in some way. And this program helps them to stay in that lifestyle and occupation that they love. AgriBuildy coming up later in the program. We're pleased to welcome in right now Sachin Pavithran, who is Assistive Technology Specialist and Disability Law and Policy Coordinator for Center for Persons with Disabilities. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Tom.
We appreciate you you coming in to be with us. We have with us as well Shane Johnson, who is the Assistant Director of Development for CPD. Thanks.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And returning to our microphone, Story Powell, whose voice will be familiar with UPR listeners. She was an intern here, did some work for us. She does marketing PR for Assistive Technology Program. Thanks.
Good to be here, Tom. Thanks for having us.
Let me start with you, Sachin Pavithran. You were born in India, grew up in Dubai, which is in the United Arab Emirates. You're legally blind. Tell us about some of the experiences you had growing up before you came to the U.S. I believe it was in your late teens you came to the U.S.
Yeah, I came to the U.S. when I was about 17. Growing up in Dubai, being legally blind, I did not know any other disabled individuals. Did not have any role models of any sort to overcome my disability. So it was a challenge because I did not know how to deal with certain issues I was dealing with when I was starting to lose my eyesight. And the only way I was able to, deal with schooling is because my parents worked a lot with me, especially my mom. She read all my textbooks and was able to help me out throughout the schooling. They really did not have any kind of accommodations back then. Things have changed significantly now, but when I was going through school, K through 12, really didn't have much at all. So all through K through 12, just did it based on the help of my mom and then just came out here for college.
So no services to speak of. I guess if you have not had your parents who were doing that for you, you couldn't have gone to school.
Basically, what they had at that time is a school for people with disability, which was more like a daycare for individuals with disabilities. And my parents did not want, for good reasons, to put me in that kind of situation. They knew I had more potential, so they put me through mainstream school and they helped me out all through school.
And that's a whole subject for a little later in this program, mainstreaming versus... sometimes this has been warehousing and just sticking people with disabilities somewhere else. At other points in our history, you could call it by kinder names, but now it's mainstreaming. So you came to the U.S. to come to college. How did you find that experience? What programs were there to help you there?
Well, before I came out to the U.S., my dad did a lot of asking around about accommodations and things available for individuals with disabilities, especially for someone who's blind. And it seemed like there was a lot available. And I did find quite a bit of access to materials and items that I'll need for schooling when I got here. The biggest struggle I had once I got to Utah State University, it was dealing with attitudes of individuals such as professors or other cohorts where they were not sure someone who's blind can really do what is expected of everyone in the class. I came in as a computer science student and the computer science department really did not think someone who's blind can go into that field, so I had to switch majors. And I went into the College of Business Information Systems, and you know, I went into that, and I was able to do quite a bit in that department, even though it was computer-related as well.
Mm. What were those professors' concerns?
Well, computer science being very visual, their biggest concern is how is a blind person going to do computer programming? Although I've been doing programming before I came to the U.S. In a much younger age, the other concern was how can someone who's blind do math classes, and if computer science had a lot of high-level math classes. So a lot was the ignorance of what an individual who's blind can really do and compete in a regular environment.
So you got a degree in business information systems and another degree in marketing, I understand.
Yes.
And then got on with the CPD. Mm-hmm. Tell me in brief about the assistive technology program before we do a little history here.
The assistive technology program has been with the CPD for over 20 years now. It's a program that's around in every state. Utah Assistive Technology Program is the name of the program over here. We provide resources for families and individuals with disabilities to have access to technology so that they can be independent to compete with their peers and do things beyond what they're able to do right now. So providing resources and access to the technology is what we primarily do through that program.
We'll cover that a little bit later in the program. By the way, we're talking about disability rights and the progress for people with disabilities on the program today. It's the 40th anniversary of Center for Persons with Disabilities at Utah State University. And we'd love to have your question or comment for our guests. I'd love to hear your experience. If you're disabled or have a family member or would like to comment on this, the number is 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495. Or you can go to our website, upr.org, and click on the Access Utah link and email us from that link, upr.org. You get to us from Twitter as well. I'd love to hear from you at 1-800-826-1495. We have with us Sachin Pavithran, who is Assistive Technology Specialist at the Center for Persons with Disabilities. Shane Johnson, Assistant Development Officer for CPD, is with us. And Story Powell, who does marketing and PR for Assistive Technology Program. Let's turn to you, Shane Johnson, and all of our guests, in fact. I won't start at the beginning of this exhibit, which I found very informative. They start at, the beginnings of time, but...
I think the beginning of written history.
Yeah, it was very interesting, but we won't have time for all of that. But early in the century, with progress in science, is where maybe we'd pick this up, there was kind of a good news, bad news for people with disabilities. People thought, well, with this new burgeoning of science, we can help people. But often the treatments were pretty bad, you might say.
Right. I really encourage everybody who's able to go down to the Special Collections area of the library and check out that exhibit. I spent an hour and a half at least myself down there the other day, and it was pretty engrossing. You really find out that early in the last century, the Industrial Revolution, there was obviously a lot of potential to help serve people with disabilities, but it was really the attitude towards disability was pretty appalling, and everybody with disability a lot of times were all treated the same, despite the incredible difference in their disabilities and in the needs that they had for those disabilities. So, there were a lot of institutions that had appalling conditions, and it was really a horrendous life, and it was there wasn't a lot of hope for anybody at that time when they had a disability.
In fact, societal reaction to people with disabilities at some points, even into this century, there is scapegoating, right? You blame some of the society's ills on the people with disabilities, or you in some way feel that they have a moral deficiency because of how they are.
There were a lot of... I think there were a lot of mixed emotions going on at that time. People were not sure what someone with a disability could do or could not do, and most often you just found individuals with disabilities just completely isolated from society. A lot of us, I think, due to fear, and you know, like Shane said, they were all grouped into one, you know, one group. No matter what the disability was, they are all considered, you know, these are disabled, or what was referred to back then as handicapped individuals. So they are no use to the society. So let's just put them in one corner and forget about them.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt is a very interesting case. He's portrayed there in the exhibit. I've seen a couple of documentaries on FDR. One point that is made very clearly about his disability is how extraordinary what he was able to accomplish was. Because if he had not had those resources or had not had that drive, the usual what you did was either put your loved one in an institution, or you put them in the back room, and you don't talk about them much.
Right. I think that, you know, it's very interesting that these days we celebrate that Franklin Delano Roosevelt was a president with a disability. But it's important to note that back in that day, they went to incredible lengths to hide it. It wasn't something that they were proud of or that they wanted to advertise. So that's been a positive change in people's attitudes.
Mm. Now, in today's media environment, maybe FDR doesn't get elected. If you have the attitudes he had back then,
right,
toward the disabled, because it would have been very widely known that he was in a wheelchair. But he went to great lengths to make it seem like he could actually walk, because he knew that with the prevailing attitudes of the time, he wouldn't get elected.
Yeah, indeed. It really seems impossible that they were able to do it, but most people weren't aware of the extent of his disability.
Yeah. I'd like to move this forward then to the Holocaust. Maybe, Mr. Pavithran, you talk a little bit about this in that era. I didn't remember. You know, you recall that 6 million Jews were killed in the Holocaust, but there were some 200,000 people with disabilities killed also in the Holocaust. That's something that is not as usually remembered.
I think when you look at history, a lot of times it's the isolation, like I mentioned earlier, always started with the people with disabilities, where people were taken advantage of, or, you know, for example, like where you're talking about the Holocaust, the ones who were segregated and thrown away first were always people with disabilities. It just never was talked about a whole lot, the reasons behind it. But the more you study history, you tend to find out that's where it always started. Individuals with disabilities were the first target for a lot of the incidents that happened in history.
The first instance I could find with protests and organization of people with disabilities was the League for the Physically Handicapped, 1935, New York City. And ironically enough, a protest against job discrimination in the New Deal. New Deal program trying to help people, but apparently, at least as they saw it, there is discrimination against people with disabilities.
Right, and that's interesting that you went back to 1935. We just screened a film here called Lives Worth Living that covers the history of the disability rights movement, and they actually started in World War II. You know, I think it's ironic that while World War II, the Holocaust, kind of represents one of the low points in the history of people with disabilities, but on the flip side of that, all of the wounded soldiers coming home had a major effect on changing people's attitudes about disability. So organizations like the one you just mentioned finally were able to gain some traction. And the movement really took off from there as people viewed, you know, now these were their heroes who had disabilities. And then it took a while, but that slowly, that attitude filtered to other people with disabilities. So that was a crucial turning point.
Mm. We turn to, Story Powell, you had a comment.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention, and this could be skipping forward a little bit, but while we have made progress, going back to the point that there are still strides to be made, I read a story yesterday, and the listeners can find this story online at Disability Scoop. and they are a news organization that covers issues related to disability. But this little girl who lives, I believe, in Philadelphia, has some developmental disabilities, and she needed some kind of organ transplant. I believe it was a kidney. And the hospital in Philadelphia actually denied her that because they said her quality of life wasn't enough because of her developmental disabilities, that more or less she deserved to be on that list to receive the transplant. And there's been a huge outrage among the community. And there's, in fact, listeners who are interested can sign an online petition to recall the hospital's decision. But I just think that's an example that, you know, while we've made huge progress, there are still these horrendous incidents today.
Interesting. Yeah, that indicates more progress yet to be made. Mr. Pavitron, did you have a comment on that?
Yeah, it's sad, but, you know, progress is being made in many different levels. But again, when it comes to, you know, there's laws on the book of what access needs to be available for individuals with disability. You know, Americans with Disabilities Act is a big thing that people hear about, the ADA. But in spite of all that, we still struggle within the community to make people understand the attitude towards people with disability is still lacking way, way behind on how they need to be treated. People are still being treated as second-class citizens, you know, in spite of everything that's happened in the last few decades.
We do have a caller, Terry, if I got your name right, in Logan. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call. I have a question for Sachin. What was your sensation when you drove a car for the first time down on the beach?
Sounds like, Terry, you know Sachin.
Yes, I do know Terry. You know, blindness has never held me back. I've done things in my life which a lot of people think is not capable, a blind person is not capable to do. Driving a car was a lot of fun. And, you know, it was a thrill for me. If other people would have known I was doing it, I probably would have gotten in trouble.
Thanks for that, Terry. Is there anything else we should know that Sachin does that we don't
know
about?
Very nice talking to you, and I enjoy this information a lot. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Terry. Terry called 1-800-826-1495, 1-800-826-1495. You can call the program as well. We'd love to hear your experience or your question or comment for our guests, who are Sachin Pavitron, who is Assistive Technology Specialist with the Center for Persons with Disabilities, Shane Johnson, Assistant Development Officer for CPD, and Story Powell, who does marketing and PR for Assistive Technology Program, talking about the history of disability rights. In the last segment, coming up to about 15 minutes, we're going to be talking with Luke Peterson with the AgriBility Program. That's a program in Utah which helps people who have made their living and their life in agriculture who become disabled to continue in that life and that occupation. The number again is 1-800-826-1495. So, Sachin, driving a car, what else do you do that we may not think a blind person can do?
Well, the driving the car part probably shouldn't be.
That was on the beach, I guess. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
As far as, you know, I pretty much do anything that, you know, all my friends do. I don't let my blindness stop me from, you know, I love outdoors. I used to do a lot of rock climbing. I used to, you know, I do camping. I travel a lot for fun and for work. I don't let my blindness be the reason I don't do something. Certain things has to be adapted and modified to do a certain way, but it never held me back.
Mm. Very good. We're going to take a brief break here and be back with our guests talking about progress for people with disabilities. We'll talk about the civil rights era and a key figure there called Ed Roberts, who I learned about recently. Maybe he's new to you, but in the exhibit it says anywhere where you have a curb cut for a person in a wheelchair, you can thank Ed Roberts. We'll learn about him and some other history following the break.
I'm Mackenzie Hamilton, and I'd like to invite you to join me and Tom Williams for Evening News at 5:30, new in 2012. A New View, with daily reports from Moab, St. George, Cedar City, Vernal, Salt Lake City, Brigham City, and Cache Valley, with the latest weather and air quality conditions from the Utah Climate Center. New for You News, weekday evenings at 5:30 on Utah Public Radio, your favorite public radio station for expanded Utah news.
Support for Access Utah comes from Crum Brothers Artisan Bread at 300 South and 300 West in Logan. Now with new hours, open Monday through Saturday 7 until 3 and Saturday 8 until 3, offering a changing menu of French breakfast pastries with local seasonal fruits and serving lunch sandwiches.
Thanks for listening to Access Utah today. Still to come on this hour of talking about disability rights, we're going to talk about a program in Utah called AgriBility. It helps people who have become disabled, who are farmers or ranchers, to continue in that lifestyle, which is important to many people, helps them to continue with that life. We'll talk with Luke Peterson, and who's coordinator of the program, and with a couple of gentlemen who have benefited from that program. And as I said, that's coming up in about 10 or 15 minutes. Right now, we're talking with Sachin Pavathiran, who is with the Center for Persons with Disabilities, Utah State University. He's policy coordinator for the Center for Persons with Disabilities. Shane Johnson's with us, assistant development officer for CPD, and Story Powell, who does marketing PR for the Assistive Technology Program. Let's move forward in history. This is something that I learned or remembered with this very informative exhibit. The growing disapproval from the disability rights movement for pity images. And, right, of course, if you watch the Jerry Lewis telethon, that's what you see. And long after that was disapproved of, apparently he continued with that. His point was, well, we need to raise money, and this is how we can get the most money, is to bring out pathetic images of people with disabilities. But this became, I guess, frowned upon by the community.
Yeah. I think that a big part of the disability rights movement has been reclaiming the dignity of people with disabilities. They fought very hard for that. And so, that extended to everything. Even if people were trying to help, if they were in any way harming that, the dignity of people with disabilities, then, they became yet another thing that they had to fight to change.
Sachin Pavathiran, I wonder your comments on this. The dignity of people with disabilities versus this pity image that many people had, because it was perpetuated and by many people who had the best motives in mind.
You know, a lot of people want to do good, and they want to serve and help. Sometimes they fail to realize the damage it can cause when you do a certain, for example, the way Jerry Lewis was doing it. Individuals with disabilities want to be treated the same way that anyone else are treated within the community, making them feel like they have a very miserable life, have everyone around them feel sorry for them, really does not make you feel great when you go home, especially when people are talking about you in the worst possible way. It just, I don't know. It's really hard to digest. That's the impression that individuals have, especially when some people come and tell me, I am so glad it's not me who is blind or disabled. I'm so glad none of my kids have the suffering and the struggles you have. Well, I'm really not suffering. Mm-hmm. I'm not struggling. I do things just like anyone else does. True, I have to do things differently. I have to adapt a little bit, but I'm not suffering. I'm not struggling. I don't wake up every morning thinking, oh, what a miserable life I'm living.
Hmm. Let me, I don't know which of my guests wants to tell me a bit about Ed Roberts, very important in the disability rights movement. And again, that quote, to anywhere you have a curb cut for a person in a wheelchair, you can thank Ed Roberts. This comes in the sort of the time period of the civil rights movement, and I think people with disabilities were inspired by this, and they wanted to rise up as well.
Right, and Ed Roberts was a trailblazer in a lot of ways, but he, one of the first things he did was he attended University of California at Berkeley, and we know that in the 60s, Berkeley was, a very progressive place and a hotbed of protest and progressive thinking. Well, they were very reluctant to admit Ed Roberts, who I believe he had polio, but he slept in an iron lung at night. He was a wheelchair user, and he had to fight very hard to get admitted, and they would only admit him on the grounds that he, instead of being in a dorm, was actually in the infirmary. Mm. Once he was there, he started a lot of organizations for students with disabilities. And then, yeah, he went on to become a prolific fighter in the disability rights movement from there.
Hmm. Mr. Pavitran.
The independent living movement during that era was significant. And Ed Roberts played a significant role in, you know, getting the voice out and getting people with disabilities charged up to, you know, protest and to vocalize, you know, how they're being treated in the community and how the government is not paying attention to them. Yeah, Ed Roberts really played a significant role in a lot of the rules, laws, and changes that came about in the last couple of decades.
What are some of the other milestone pieces of legislation or bits of history, Mr. Pavitran, that happened during this time?
Well, in 1973, there was the Rehabilitation Act that came out. The biggest one, which a lot of people are familiar with, is the ADA, the Americans with Disabilities Act, that came out in 1990, which was basically a step forward, or they claim it as the emancipation proclamation for people with disabilities, because that was the first step towards accepting individuals with disability within the community into employment, into a lot of settings that they were isolated from in the past.
Mm-hmm. What has been the effect then of the ADA? That's several years now. I imagine it's been quite a culture shift.
It's about we are 21, 22 years into it now almost, and it's changed quite a bit, especially in, we see, like you mentioned, the curb cuts in all the sidewalks. We see a lot of guidelines in buildings, accessible entryways, all those kind of things. A lot of acceptance in employment, but still, there's a long ways to go. The biggest barrier still, which no laws can change, is attitudinal barriers that mm-hmm. people with disabilities still face, where individuals in the community, in employment, in education, still are not very certain or sure how someone with a disability can really be a contributing member or can really compete in this society.
Mm-hmm. And Story, you told us earlier about this case, which indicates attitudes, which maybe there needs to be more progress.
Well, and I was just thinking actually of another example, and this is, I guess, what you would call the hot button topic in the disability world right now. Developmental disabilities like autism and ADHD and related things, there's still a lot of stigma attached with those things, especially for young children in the elementary school system. And I know one of the fights in that arena right now is for insurance companies to cover the treatments for those children, because they do not always do that. And so we can see, as we progress and learn about more in depth of disabilities and what they mean, there always comes the new fight. And I think that's the thing with disabilities, like you mentioned, the curbs for wheelchair users. And then there's always, different disabilities, and those fights don't occur at the same time. And I think that's kind of the difference in the disability world. It's always a continuing, way up. It's never, will never just be done.
Mm-hmm. And you made a reference to the fact that rights and progress for people with developmental disabilities has lagged behind, and there's still work to be done there.
Definitely, and I think it's because there's such a large stigma attached to them, and we could go way back in history with that. But I think we are making progress. I know there's a lot of support groups now, especially for parents of children with these disabilities, because they've been told for so long to do things like put their children in institutions, or they're never will be capable of this and that. And what's interesting, if you go online and just do a search for these parental blogs, you can get on and find amazing stories of not only how these parents are coping with keeping their children at home, but the successes they're having in everyday life that was never anticipated.
Let's go to our next caller. This is Richard in Nibley. Richard, welcome to the program.
Hi, yeah, this is Richard Eversall out in Nibley. I just wanted to mention a couple things. One thing that you talked about, the independent living program, this movement. We have a great independent living center here in Logan called Options for Independence. And for people who might be interested in accessing those services, it'd be worthwhile for them to look into options. The second question, more on a, or a comment on more on a grassroots level, is housing as being a problem for those of us who use wheelchairs. At least access to affordable housing is a question and a problem. And also just going to visit or to see anybody, we're pretty much prohibited from getting into a house without assistance because of steps, narrow hallways. I can't stay with my children because they have a new home, but it's narrow hallways, narrow doorways, and in order to overcome that, you have to build a specialty home. I wonder what's being done and if there really is any progress in universal design and those types of things in the United States.
We'll get our guest to comment on that. First, before we let you go, Richard, contact information for Options for Independence.
They're at about 10th, they're about 10th North and Main Street, and I think it's 752-5252, I believe, is the number there.
It's actually
Might be wrong. I don't really know. I don't work there. But
looks like Sachin Pavithran knows the number, so we'll have him give it.
Okay,
Richard, thank you for those comments. We'll have our guests address those.
The contact number is 753-5353 for Options for Independence. They're a great program for people to get assistance with independent living and get learn more about what options available out there.
Wonderful. We're coming to the end of this segment. I want to address Richard's questions. First, on affordable housing, progress needs to be made there. Do you know of any progress coming up with affordable housing?
To be honest, there's some things happening here and there. It's very limited. There's not really any solid progress happening in that area. It's those who choose to go their route of making accessible homes or housing, they tend to happen. But every time you do that, the cost is significantly higher that a lot of people tend not to do it. That it's just not an option that's really, it's not universally not accepted necessarily, but it's just not a practice yet for people to make it.
And the problems with visiting, Shane, that our guest, Richard, said he can't even visit his children because of the place they live.
Right. I think that it's indicative of a couple things. One thing is that obviously there's a difference between being able to do legislation that affects the public spaces, but this is much more dealing with people's private spaces, and that's just another big barrier we have to overcome. It was obviously easier to overcome this barrier in public spaces, and I think that we will. It's going to be a long fight, and that's why, even though, this is our 40th anniversary and we are honoring the past and we're celebrating the accomplishments, but we're a long ways from declaring any kind of victory because we still have a lot of these issues to face, and there's a lot more we can do to help people with disabilities reach their full potential and live their lives.
Just very briefly, Shane, any upcoming events with this 40th anniversary?
Yeah, so we do have, like you mentioned, the history panels that are up in the library, and those are really the history of disability, like I said, from about the beginning of the entire history of the written word. And then we do have history panels that also are just more specifically the history of the CPD itself. And those they're currently on display in our office, and they are going to be on display in the Capitol Rotunda in Salt Lake sometime in February. I do not have the exact date on that yet, but you can view them on our website. If you go to www.cpd.org, usu.org. And then there's a section in the bottom right corner called Legacy of Excellence. And if you click on that, you can view our view these history panels. And those two are very interesting and very informative and more locally focused on the work that the CPD has done the last 40 years.
Very good. Let's give Sergeant Papatron the last word. Just a general, anything you'd like to say about attitudes toward the disabled?
The only thing I would say is, you know, treat everyone equally. You treat individuals with disabilities just the way you think people should be treating you. Just don't, you know, segregate them. Include them in any activities or community efforts. Just they are, you know, they want to be part of the community just like anyone else would like to. They all live normal life. Myself, I do. You know, I have a great wife, a real cute daughter. You know, sometimes people get surprised. How does someone who's blind have a family that they live with and goes to work every day? But they all do. A lot of people do. And just give them the respect that they deserve.
Very good. We have coming up following a break in the Steve Eaton commentary, we're going to bring in Luke Peterson with AgriBility and a couple of gentlemen who benefited from that program, which helps people in agriculture who become disabled to stay in agriculture. That'll be coming up. Our thanks to our guests in this part of the program. Story Powell, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us, Tom.
Sachin Papatron, thanks.
Thank you.
And Shane Johnson, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been great.
Coming up more after break.
Steve Eaton is a freelance writer who lives in Logan. He writes a column that appears in the Deseret News every other Saturday.
The other day as I was leaving work, a friend said to me as he walked away, "Fetch a gator, put lice on your bookend." I paused and smiled and said, "Okay." People are always saying strange things to me. I've learned to let go of those kind of comments. What he probably said was, "Catch you later, have a nice weekend." I'm in my 50s now, and for some reason, words seem to get lost on the way to my brain, which can make it difficult to consistently interact with people in appropriate ways. The other day, my daughter Sarah said to me, "Would you like some dog lips?" I looked at her. I looked at our dog. My dog looked at me. "No, thank you," I said carefully. I later learned that she had offered me chocolate. She pronounces it chocolate. I don't know if others understand what it's like to have their brains rearrange incoming messages. It's unsettling. For example, the other day I was on the phone when my boss came to me and said, "Go get your shorts, I bought a fish from my hat." When I hung up, I found her and asked her to repeat herself. I considered just getting some shorts and waiting to see if she'd show up with a fish in her hat. I decided, however, I had misunderstood her. You see, I've developed coping skills. Here's a 4-step process to go through in business meetings to avoid professional embarrassment. If someone says something odd, I try to determine how likely it is I heard correctly. For example, if someone in a meeting calmly suggests you flip, rattle, burp, smart your presentation, think to yourself, has anyone ever flip, rattle, burp, smarted their presentation here? If the answer is no, then you probably heard wrong. Replay the phrase using rhyming words in your head until you come to a combination that makes more sense. It works like this. The creeps in a bin of blues hay, hiccups will make you burn. Try it again. Jets meet again on Tuesday, fit trucks will churn. Try it again. Let's bleep again on Tuesday to frisk us so we will learn. Let's meet again on Tuesday and discuss what we have learned. If the last sentence sounds worse than the first sentence, avoid participating in the discussion. If you must talk, try to say something about, quote, our need to be proactive and synergize if we are to be successful. Or you could just say, "Don't underestimate the power of social media." That almost always works. If all else fails, feign sudden death. In some companies, if someone suddenly dies mid-meeting, they stop the meeting after the next agenda item and reschedule it to the next day. Sometimes, despite my best efforts, I'll get something wrong and get in trouble. For example, my wife sent me out for Doritos and some dental floss. She made a big point of telling me I needed to be back by 6:30 because she had invited some friends over for a dinner party. I almost got it right. I got back at 5:45 with a bag of Doritos. I also had 630 pounds of peat moss with me. I couldn't find rental moss. All wasn't lost. My wife, a veteran of candle and Tupperware parties, improvised. We sold 430 pounds of peat moss that night and launched a multi-level marketing peat moss company. So I admit I have a hearing problem. I should probably get a hearing aid. I have no problem with that, but I don't think it would be a very good time to get one. The presidential campaign season is just warming up. Now when the candidates say something that seems absurd, I just talk it up to bad hearing. Wouldn't it be frightening to discover they're really saying what I think they're saying? I think I'm better off waiting until 2013. This is Steve Eaton.
Support for Utah Public Radio comes from the Cache Valley Center for the Arts, presenting the Irish step dancing and music of Celtic Knights, tonight and tomorrow at 7:30 at the Ellen Eccles Theater. Ticket information is at centerforthearts.us.
Thanks for staying with us through the break. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams, and we continue our theme on disability. Disability rights and programs for the disabled on this edition of Access Utah. And we turn to a program, I believe it's a nationwide program. There's at least one in Utah. It's called AgriBility. This is a program which helps people when they become disabled to stay in agriculture. This is a way of life for many people, and they want to stay in this lifestyle that they love. This program helps them to do that. I have with me in studio Luke Peterson, who's program manager. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And in studio as well is Tana Beckstead, who is program coordinator. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Also on the line with me, telephone, Tyler Hunter from Ephraim. Tyler, welcome to the program as well.
Thank you.
And we'll hear Tyler's story. He's benefiting from AgriBility. Let's start with you, Luke Peterson. Tell me in brief, what is AgriBility? I described it a little bit. Expand on that. How long has this been going?
The AgriBility program is a national program. It's been going for 20 years. Just celebrated that anniversary. In Utah, a little bit less than that, since 1998, we've had a program. And AgriBility is a part of the broader extension program that's run by Utah State University. And in Utah, we've set up our program as a group of professionals around the state who are interested in supporting the future of agriculture, and people that value and respect the work that people in agriculture do, and they want to see that continue. Hmm.
Tana Beckstead, this is an occupation that is a way of life, right? And that's maybe one of the reasons for a program like AgriBility. People want to stay in this way of life.
That's true, and farming and ranching is, once it gets in your blood, you don't want to quit. That's what you want to do for the rest of your life, and it's really a way of life for all of the farmers and ranchers that I know of. They wouldn't have it any other way. That's how they want to fulfill their lives is by farming and ranching and continuing those traditions.
Maybe the best way to illustrate this is with someone who has benefited from the program. Let's bring in Tyler Hunter. You live in Ephraim or Ephraim area, Tyler?
Yeah, I live in Ephraim, just south of Ephraim.
And did you grow up in agriculture?
I did.
Tell me a bit about your operation there.
We just run mother cows, raise the offspring for sale, which they'll butcher, and everybody ends up eating them.
Yeah. Is this a family operation? It's been your family for a while, or?
It was me and my dad. Until a few years ago, he was killed, and so it's just kind of me and my wife now.
Mm-hmm. And then tell me what happened, what occasioned you or your family to need the services of AgriBility?
Well, when I was hurt, I couldn't get in the tractor. I couldn't really do anything, so AgriBility came in and helped me get a device where I could get my tractor and some gate openers to where we could just push on the gate with either the pickup or the four-wheelers. Mm-hmm. And so that's really helped us out a bunch.
Good. How were you hurt?
I was doing some soft fascia, and I fell off some scaffolding. Fell about 17 feet and broke my back, and I have a spinal cord injury now.
Ah. And so tell us again what AgriBility has done there.
They just gone in and really got me up and going again, got the tractor where we can get in and out, and that way I can cut hay and put up hay on my own and put some gate openers in and just a few other odds and ends, and controls for my ranger to where I can go out and check on the cows. And had anything I've needed to get going again, I'd really have to help.
And I suppose without these services, these helps, you maybe would not have been able to continue with your agricultural operation.
Yeah, it would have been very difficult to keep going had we not had help from them.
Did you have a backup plan in case this didn't work out to stay in agriculture? Did you have a plan to go elsewhere for your make your living?
You know, at the time I didn't know which way to go. So Luke contacted me from Agri Building and said, hey, let's see if we can get you up and going again.
Yeah. And I suppose this is definitely where you wanted to stay. You wanted to stay in agriculture.
Yeah, it's a good way of life for my kids. Mm-hmm. You know, we get to spend a lot of family time together where we don't have to do a lot of traveling. We just stay close to home and keep everybody out of trouble.
This is something you think your kids are going to?
Yeah, I think so. They, you know, every day they go out and help me feed and do whatever we can to work together, and it works out good.
Yeah, and as you say, good place to raise a family.
Yeah, it's a very good place.
Yeah. Luke, apparently you contacted Tyler. Is this something you learn about someone in agriculture who's had an accident? And
yeah, like I said, we try to maintain a kind of a network of people around the state that are in contact with farmers and ranchers in their local communities. And in this particular instance, I think it was an extension agent that had found out about Tyler's injury and got us in contact with him, and we were able to come in and try to help out the situation.
Tell me about the range of services. Sounds like in Tyler's case, a modification to some equipment was able to help him continue in agriculture.
Yeah, the tagline that we've used for a long time, which I heard earlier on when you were introducing what we're going to talk about, is that we serve people in agriculture who have disabilities. We try not to use that as much anymore because people in agriculture don't have disabilities. At least that's what they feel like. So I think it's a culture of people who are very independent, very hardworking, and very committed to what they do, and so they stay in their occupation no matter what happens. And so now, you know, we try, in order to get the word out and to help as many people as possible, we try not to use the word disability, kind of like what Sachin and the others were saying. Sometimes people get the wrong idea about what that means. So we talk about helping people from anything from something more difficult, like a spinal cord injury that Tyler's dealing with, or, you know, someone that just has health problems that go along with getting older, you know, having bad knees and bad back and things that make it very difficult to do a job that's so physically demanding as agriculture is.
Tyler, I wanted to ask you about that. There is that label, which I used, you know, disabled, and Luke is telling me we're trying to move beyond that. How do you see yourself? What would you tell people when they approach you, and what label to use or no label, I guess?
Well, I try not to be seen as disabled. You know, a lot of people, they look at you in a wheelchair and think that you are, but, you know, there's a lot you can do after you get hurt. You know, to just keep going, and otherwise I think you'll just go downhill. So I just every day wake up and just be glad that I'm alive and go out and do what I want and enjoy life.
Do you run into or are you put in contact with other farmers or ranchers who have had an accident and want to continue to be independent? I don't know if you've talked to any others in this situation.
Yeah, I've got with Luke, and we've talked to a few. You know, just to try and keep everybody with a good attitude, because it's really easy to get frustrated and want to give up. And so, you know, if I find somebody that's maybe been in an accident or I know about, I'll get with Luke and we'll go see them and see if we can help them out, or people that have, you know, just older farmers, like Luke said, you know, that just can't get in the tractor anymore. You know, a lot of them don't know, well, there's somebody out there that can actually help you get going again. And so we've gone out and talked to a few of them, got them steps they can get in the tractor again, and really it just changes their attitude. They're just so much happier, you know, than get back on the tractor or back on the horse or something, you know, where they couldn't before. So
let's turn back to Tana Beckstead. What are some of the other specific services that AgriBility offers? There's modifications to equipment, but I'm sure there's a broad range of things.
Yes, and we can coordinate benefits through other disability agencies. We do work a lot with CPD, and there's options for independence, and I believe they called in earlier. We can refer these people to other sources and other agencies in the area that might be able to help them. We also use Vocational Rehabilitation as an agency. We partner with them for counseling and guidance, and also to keep up with their employment needs as far as in the farming and agriculture community. They can help fund some of those projects that these farmers need. So there's many organizations that help us out as well.
Very good. I want to turn back to Luke. And Tyler mentioned he's been out with you or you facilitate conversations among farmers and ranchers. Part of this, I imagine, is education. For example, Tyler brought up the example that you did as well. Farmers or ranchers who get older and maybe think, I can't continue. But in fact, they probably could.
Yeah, I think that people are fairly aware, or at least they're becoming more aware, that farmers are exposed just naturally to a lot of risks. You know, there's a lot of market risk, and Mother Nature, you know, is really hard to deal with for farmers. But I think that a lot of people don't realize how at risk farmers are as far as injury and disability goes. And so that's an education point, you know, even among farmers, that, you know, just injury rates among people in agriculture are double what they are in the regular working population. So people become injured either because of the contact they have with animals or with equipment, or just because they've been doing really physically demanding jobs for so long. In fact, the average age of people working in agriculture is 58. So there's a lot of things that, a lot of physical difficulties that farmers are having, which is difficult because the job is so physically demanding. So what we're trying to do is put the word out too, as far as education-wise, that, agriculture is difficult as it is, and we'd like to try to ease some of that difficulty, especially in farmers who are getting older. And there's resources out there to support people that way. You know, farmers are supported in the market and other ways, but AgriAbility is out there to support them kind of in the health realm of things. So.
Very good. We're out of time. Tell me the best contact point. Is it the website?
Yeah, you can go to our website, agriabilityofutah.com, or you can also call our 800 number, which is 877-225-1860. And if you have friends, family members, people that are dealing with problems that are making it difficult to work, we like to help out.
We've been talking about agriability and focusing on disability rights for this entire hour. And with us in this segment has been Luke Peterson, Program Manager. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
And Tana Beckstead is Program Coordinator. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having us.
We very much appreciate Tyler Hunter from EFRAM for being with us on the phone. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
And good luck with your operation there.
Thanks.
And thanks for listening to Access Utah.
Access Utah is a production of Utah Public Radio. You can listen to this episode or previous episodes of Access Utah anytime at upr.org, where you can find a link to subscribe to our podcast. This is Utah Public Radio, KUSR HD1 89.5 Logan, KUSK HD1 88.5 Vernal, KUSL HD1 89.3 Richfield, KUST HD1 88.7 Moab, and KUSU FM HD1 91.5 Logan.